Alice Driver's new book, Life and Death of the American Worker, The Immigrants Taking on America's Largest Meatpacking Company, is an expose covering over a decade in the lives of Tyson factory workers across several plants in the state of Arkansas. It is a behind-the-scenes look at how Tyson has such a firm hold on both U.S. and Arkansas state policy to such an extent that workers are left with no recourse and little hope of improved lives. Their fight for better working conditions and fair pay, with women leading the charge, by the way, is both heroic and heartbreaking. Many were exposed to a toxic chemical spill and forced to work throughout COVID. These are the folks who make the food we eat amid the most deplorable conditions. Again, the name of the book is Life and Death of the American Worker. Alice Driver is a James Beard Award-winning writer from the Ozark Mountains in Arkansas. In 2024, she won the Lucas Work in Progress Prize from Columbia Journalism School and the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard for the Life and Death of the American Worker. It's a great pleasure to welcome Alice Driver to the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on Publication Day.
It's really nice to have you. Congratulations on the publication of the book. As I mentioned in the introduction, you've been working on this for a very long time. At what point did this come on your radar and you saw a story here of something that was concerning that you really wanted to tell the full story?
Well, I'm from the Ozark Mountains. I grew up in a small town of less than 200 people, and Ozarks are the home of the largest meatpacking company in the United States and the second largest globally, which is Tyson Foods. And so I grew up around, you know, around chicken farms and chicken farmers and the trucking industry that exists in Arkansas to move chickens to Tyson plants. And I've been working for a journalist for a long time, and I'm really interested in issues. I often report in Spanish because I'm fluent in Spanish, and I like reporting on the food system. So I had been interested in writing about Tyson workers for a long time, but I didn't get funding to do an article until 2020. And at no point did I think it was going to become a book.
So my understanding is through your book, and but there are 16 locations that Tyson has in Arkansas?
Tyson has in Arkansas 21 facilities in the state.
21 facilities. And they're of different, they serve different purposes, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, the company in Arkansas is mostly processing chicken. And for example, there's one entire plant in Arkansas in the town of Nashville dedicated entirely to chicken nuggets. So different plants have, you know, produced different products.
When you look at this as a story as a whole, what do you think is important as far as this life and death of the American worker? Of this is an expose of the labor practices of this huge meatpacking company. And I guess I'm curious as to what the baseline of those labor practices are and how they have changed that have become such a detriment to those who work at those factories.
So my book, what I really want readers to come away with is that some people might say, oh, this is about Tyson Foods. I would say it is not about Tyson Foods. It is about, in the U.S., the meatpacking industry is extremely consolidated. There's a handful of companies, and the interesting thing for me is that Kamala Harris has included this in her economic plan, that she wants to address the problems of consolidated meatpacking, because what happens when you have a few major players, they really control everything. And so in the U.S., for example, they've been accused of colluding to increase prices for consumers. And, you know, the other side of the coin is that they work together to keep wages down for workers. And so all of the things that are happening in my book, it's not just Arkansas and it's not just Tyson. It's looking at a system in which there are very few players and power is consolidated and really needs to be broken up.
The latest headlines that are reaching us over the last several weeks has been in regards to Boar's Head. Does that fall into this?
Well, yeah, when I read about Boar's Head and the outbreak of listeria and the conditions, reading about the conditions and how they're described, I thought, wow, when people read my book, they're going to think, you know, this is not uncommon, that in terms of conditions in which there's, you know, bugs or worms or weevils and mold and pools of water and pools of blood and all of these things.
On June 27, 2011, there was a chemical accident that took place inside Tyson Foods. It is at a chicken processing plant in Springdale, Arkansas. That is where the company is headquartered, we should note. The company covered it up, but the spill left their employees injured and sick and obviously terrified. Give us an idea of what happened and ultimately what that showed us as to the very inherent problems at that facility.
So when I started doing interviews in 2020 for this project, I was really focusing on COVID work conditions. But what came out of the interviews over time was that many of the workers who I was following, some of whom died, the ones who died had first been in this chemical accident in 2011. And so for me, it was a way to tell a long-term story about labor conditions at these plants, because chemical accidents at meatpacking plants are quite common, and there have been some very good recent studies on the number of accidents. Because there's so many chemicals, both to keep refrigeration going and to sanitize workspaces. And this chemical accident, the investigation of it, which was done independently, said that it was caused because many of the workers, like the workers in my book, are immigrants and refugees. They speak their native language. Some of them are illiterate. Some of them, you know, many of them don't speak English. And so when it comes to mixing chemicals, imagine if the instructions are only in English. And in the case of this accident, that is what the independent investigation found, that the worker was not a native speaker of English and that the instructions were only in English. And so even though it seems like that could seem like a small issue, language, but when you have workers who speak 20 or 30 different languages at any given plant, imagine the translation issues. Or workers who are illiterate is the other thing, because some of the workers in my book are illiterate. And so you really have to think, you know, how am I transmitting this very important information about chemical use to these workers, and how am I training them?
It doesn't seem to me, as I was reading the book, as a small issue, but it does seem like a common sense issue and one that should be understood by those who are running the factory.
Yes, it should be a common sense issue. And I think that's a lot of the problems that I mentioned in my book. For example, the lack of safety equipment, you know, workers complaining that there aren't metal mesh gloves in their size, which for an outsider might sound like not a huge deal. But if you're spending all day with very large and sharp knives and all kinds of equipment, you need the correct size of metal mesh glove to protect you from injury. And so it's really about making that investment in safety.
Give us an idea of and I know everyone's story is different, of course, but a common story that you heard from an immigrant workforce that would wind up in Arkansas working in these plants.
Most of the workers who I followed who were organizing to improve labor conditions were from Mexico and Central America, which represents the largest percentage of the workforce at meatpacking plants. Many of them were dealing with issues related to carpal tunnel syndrome, which is common, and that's something that can be mitigated by allowing workers to change jobs so that they're not always doing the same repetitive motion. But changing jobs often decreases production and efficiency. So it's not always done. And, you know, so that's a common issue. And then other things that I saw during the pandemic, workers who died of COVID because, you know, during COVID, plants were not implementing recommended precautionary measures to prevent the spread of COVID.
When you look at the bill and what happened in 2011, give us a timeline of roughly how that unfolded, and from the time that it was, as you write, it was covered up, to the time where it became apparent and those stories started to come out.
You have to think of this story in the context of Arkansas, in the context of the meatpacking industry, which is really focused on building plants in rural areas and small towns where the company is going to have an outsized influence on politicians, on the media. And this is something that I see in Arkansas, because when I went to research the chemical accident, I found, you know, a handful of news articles that said, essentially, there was a chemical accident, several, 100 and I can't remember the exact number, 180 people went to the hospital. The next day, everyone was back at work.
Mm.
And that's it. There's nothing, there's nothing coming out of the Arkansas media about, an investigation or any more information. And so when I was interviewing workers in 2020, they, the workers who were in the chemical accident said that after the accident, they had trouble breathing, trouble walking. They couldn't be around chemicals. They couldn't be around anything with a chemical or fragrance. But part of the second layer of this, equation is that Tyson Foods offers on-site medical clinics to workers. And if they want their medical care to be covered by the company, they have to go through that system. And so the workers who were in the chemical accident said that after the accident, when they went to complain about these symptoms, that they were told that they were fine and they should go back to work. And so for years, they just could not figure out what was wrong. And, the few who did finally save up the money to get an outside consultation with a doctor, in the case of one of the main workers in my book, Placido, the doctor told him one entire lung has been destroyed by the chemical accident.
Placido is also, you follow a husband and wife, and his wife, Angelina, and from El Salvador, correct?
Yeah, they're both from El Salvador, and they're really the heart of the book because they both began working at Tyson when they arrived in Arkansas. And she says, thank God she got fired because she got fired, she was not in the chemical accident.
As you tell that story, you're going to appointments with the people that you write about in the book. You're going to doctor's appointments. You're in their kitchens. You're talking to them about what went on and what happened. What sense do you get about their level of, I guess, despair versus anger?
Well, the moving thing for me was obviously, like, Angelina was in despair and in mourning over the death of her husband, who died of COVID in July of 2020. But she wanted justice. And that is, I saw that, and I, to see her, because she has she never went to school. She is not literate. And she is really the person, her search for justice is what really galvanized workers, and they began to organize around the issue of what they wanted to figure out what they could do legally, whether that be a lawsuit, to hold Tyson responsible for labor conditions.
Is it your belief that Tyson has been held responsible in any way, shape, or form over the last, let's say, three decades?
No, not in any significant financial way, no.
What would that look like?
Well, part of what I lay out in my book is that the organization that oversees health and safety, which is OSHA, is understaffed and underfunded. And so they really don't have the capability to visit all the facilities in the United States. And then the second part of that is that they do impose fines sometimes on companies. For example, when there was a Tyson worker who was decapitated at a plant in Alabama. They do impose fines, but the fines are so low that, when you look at the earnings of a company like Tyson, which, last year they had $53 billion in sales. So if OSHA is imposing a fine that's, let's say, few thousand dollars or whatever it might be, that is not a significant enough fine. You know, it should be more expensive. It needs to be too expensive for companies to injure or kill workers.
Because otherwise it just becomes a cost of doing business for them.
Yeah, it's a slap on the wrist. That's what it is currently in financial terms.
As you said from the very beginning of our conversation, this is not a story about Tyson as much as it is a story about these plants across the country. Can you give us some examples of other places? I mean, there's obviously the meatpacking industry, but are there other industries that also follow suit with very similar concerns?
Well, in terms of the workforce, I mean, an industry that I include in my book is agriculture, because the entire food system, the backbone of the entire food system in the United States, is upheld by immigrant and refugee workers, many of whom are undocumented, and some of whom are children. And I think that is a point that I want to make, because we need to be thinking about our food system and listening to the people who are producing our food.
When you look at the production of the food, and then there's obviously, we mentioned boar's head, we mentioned listeria, of how this then comes down to the safety of the food that we actually eat.
Yeah, and so it's not, you know, I focus on the safety of workers, which I think is really important, but overall, we should be asking, why isn't our food system, which is heavily subsidized by the government, why is it not serving it us? Why is it not healthy for us? Why is it not safe for us? And why is it not safe for workers?
Does it come down to greed?
It does come down to profits and to the bottom line.
When we read this book, and it is sobering, where does your optimism lie?
What kept me going, because this was a very hard book to write, was the power of workers organizing themselves. And I follow an organization in Arkansas called Venceremos and another organization called the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. And they're both worker-led. And so it's workers organizing to share their stories, educate other workers about their rights, and also ask for the labor conditions that they need. And I think it's an effective and a powerful way to make change. And I hope that we will be listening to those kinds of organizations and the workers who are risking a lot to share what conditions are like.
The name of the new book, which is just out, is Life and Death of the American Worker, the Immigrants Taking on America's Largest Meatpacking Company. Alice Driver, thank you very much for spending time with us, and best of luck with the book.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the new book is Life and Death of the American Worker. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.